Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But hold your calls for a few minutes. We're going to have hopefully have a Gerard Ungerman on. We're going to be talking about depleted uranium, and I'm going to ask if my producer will come in here for just a minute. I do have a cell phone, and maybe we can track that one down. But the problem of depleted uranium is a fascinating one, because most people don't understand what depleted uranium is. And of course, depleted uranium isn't depleted at all. It is solid uranium. Now, people will tell you, oh, it's only 50 or 60% uranium. No, what they have done is they've removed 50 or 60% of the uranium-235 from the uranium-238. But depleted uranium, is all solid uranium-238 with a little bit of 235 and 234 in it that is still fissionable. Most of it has been taken out to be used for rods and things of that sort. But as far as the uranium is concerned, why it still is a solid uranium. And the problem with it is that the uranium-238 will be around for about four billion years. And so if you get this into your system, why you get a constant bombardment of certain types of radioactive material that can create early aging and get into your bones and distress your bone marrow. And you get it into yourself by simply breathing and inhaling the dust. Now, ordinarily, the uranium, people can pick it up. You don't get that much of radiation out of it. But once you create uranium oxide dust, that's where you get into problem. Now, the military loves uranium-tipped shells, and they love it because it's a wonderful weapon. And the purpose of the military is not to worry about what the world's going to be like after the war. It's to win the war. The purpose of the military is to kill people and destroy things, and there's no better weapon than a depleted uranium, because it's very, very hard, and when it's fired, it catches fire, and it simply burns right through the shell of a tank, and of course, it'll go through almost anything made of metal, and then, of course, it burns inside, it just kills everything there, but it also leaves a uranium dust as a byproduct of that. And that's where you begin to get into problems, is the uranium dust. And when you inhale that, it has a disastrous effect. Now, we hear from our government and from our media that this is all hysteria. But I went up on the web and I looked at some of the websites that were put out by the Royal Society of Medicine over in Great Britain, which I find far more reliable than the material that comes out of the American Medical Association and organizations here which are controlled by the enemies of enemies of righteousness and truth. And unfortunately, you have to ask yourself, why would anybody want to spend their whole life to get to be president of the AMA or president of the California Medical Association? What is their agenda? And I will tell you, having been active in these organizations, at least through the California Medical Association for years, I found out that the people who were involved in these organizations had an agenda. And that agenda was not something that was favorable to the health of the American people. And so I believe that they're constantly covering up what is known throughout the world, but little known by the average physician here in America, of the hazards of depleted uranium that we're using today to contaminate all of Iraq and Kuwait and Kosovo and Bosnia and Chechnya. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our special guest this afternoon is Mr. Gerard Ungerman. And Let's see, Audrey is at the same number, so we'll be talking to both Gerard and to Audrey in just a moment. Let's see who we have on the line here at the present time. All right, hi. Gerard, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, thank you so much. And so Audrey won't be with us?
Actually, no, there was a little technical difficulty. So.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about who you are?
Sure, absolutely. So again, my name is Gerard Ungerman. I've been doing documentary films with my wife and partner, Audrey Brohi, for now about 10 years. And we tend to specialize, because myself, I was in the military in the past, so I tend to specialize on stories involving conflicts and international politics. And for instance, you know, we did this documentary on the first 1991 Gulf War a few years back. We just did a documentary called Plan Colombia, cashing in on the drug war failure about the U.S. War on drugs in Colombia. And we are now in the process of finishing a new documentary about the current wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. That will basically look at, not just the actual development of the war, but also some of the things which are at stake in these wars, and it has a lot to do with energy.
Oh, now, of course, will these be distributed privately, or will they be shown on television? Will some of the major channels pick them up? What have you done with your videos you've made in the past?
On the one hand, we have sort of a relationship with this French-German TV station called Arte, which is also a distributor. And for instance, the documentary Hidden Wars of Desert Storm was shown all over Europe, in every single European country. It was shown in the Middle East, a bit in Asia. And here we have more of a difficulty. I would say that as much as in Europe in particular, we have more of a television audience. We have more of a home video market here, and we tend to do a lot of sales ourselves from our websites, hiddenwars.com for the documentary on the Gulf War and plancolombia.com for the documentary on Colombia.
On the story on the Gulf War, do you go into, of course, the highway of death and what actually happened over there in the closing hours or closing days of the Gulf War?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
All right, fine. Well, we may talk a little bit about that, but right now, of course, we want to get into some of the work you've done on depleted uranium, because the average American really doesn't understand the danger of this. After all, the government wouldn't lie to them and tell them there's no hazard there, would they at all? Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be right back here as we pull our other stations back down with us here. Well, Dr. Stan here, and our special guest this afternoon is Gerard Ungerman, and he is a film producer and produces films that are distributed in Europe and for the home market here. And I know he has been working on the subject of depleted uranium, and there's a lot of confusion because you talk about depleted, that means that there isn't anything there. But that really isn't true when we're talking about the depleted uranium. Isn't there a great deal of radioactivity in depleted uranium?
Well, it depleted doesn't mean that it's completely depleted. It means that it's less radioactive. What happened is when you take the, and again, I will really speak as a documentary filmmaker. I'm not a scientist, but I of course have to vulgarize a bit, you know, these notions, first of all, to understand them myself, and then to make them understandable for the public. You know, what it is, basically, when you mine for uranium ore, there's a process which is called the enrichment process, where basically it's going to be like trying to, in a sense, like, you know, like if you're trying to do some concentrate of lemon juice, so you get many lemons and you try to, you know, to run them through a process where you're going to have concentrated, you know, lemon juice. It's a bit what is done with the uranium ore, where the first grade, the most toxic grade of uranium-234, will actually be used. It's called a weapon grade. It's the most active uranium, and it's used, you know, to make atomic bombs. Then the second one, the 235, uranium-235, is the one that will be used for power plant to produce energy. And then the leftover, you know, which is not radioactive enough to be used either as, you know, for bombs or for fuel, but it's still, you know, still radioactive, still toxic, is called, you know, depleted uranium, and that's uranium-238. And we have tons of this one, and it comes mostly from two different sources. On the one hand, they would be, I would say, the leftover of enrichment, the ore which is not potent enough, and also called depleted uranium, you have the spent fuel coming from power plants. There's a process where it's being kind of regenerated, and then at some point it is not potent enough to be used, and it's also, you know, considered depleted uranium. And actually, the problem with this other form of spent fuel, radioactive, you know, fuel, it also contains more active parts in it, which actually is even more dangerous than the ore itself. And something which also has to be, you know, understood very clearly is that this material, you know, which has been accumulated now for about half a century now, you know, has been considered hazardous, you know, since the very beginning. And the whole issue was to try to find a relatively safe way to discard this almost useless uranium. And they were usually sealed in more or less safe barrels. And the Department of Energy in this country, who takes care of handling this, was looking for relatively safe ways to store it, and they were looking in particular for old mines, you know, so you'd have, you know, very deep wells where they could bury that thing and really pour concrete on top of it, you know, to make it, you know, very hardened. Or they would find usually things like salt ground, very stable ground, also, you know, to bury it in it, and that was the way it was being handled, you know, for again, you know, about 50 years plus at this point. And what happened is probably we don't know exactly, because, you know, this research usually all kind of, you know, military researchers are fairly secretive. We don't know exactly when this happened. It's probably around the, you know, mid 70s, probably some scientists probably looked at the property of uranium and saw that you had here a metal which is extremely dense, extremely hard, and also plentiful. I mean, once it has been mined for the other purposes of creating fuel or bomb grade and uranium, you have tons. You have literally thousands, tens of thousands, or more of tons of this ore, and there was no use for it. It was just some kind of, you know, dangerous garbage, and the garbage which it was, you know, really difficult to get rid of. And somebody just realized, hey, why don't we shape ammunition with that thing, because it's so hard, it can go through everything that we know. And it's a case which, as we have seen, unfortunately, too often. The economic and also some application eventually made some people think that, well, the hell with the risk, you know, as long as nobody realizes, after all, we have so many contaminants in our modern lives, you know, people can get cancers in so many ways, you know, who will notice? That's a bit where we are.
And of course, the thing is that they use this on their bombs, they use this on their missiles, they use this on their shells, and they're lying to the American people about its hazards. And certainly, they would never want anybody to realize that they're contaminating all of Iraq and Kuwait and Kosovo and Bosnia with this uranium dust that has health hazards to the individual. Now, you've just come back from Iraq, haven't you? Were you over there, or were you over in Kuwait? Where were you recently?
I spent 3 months between Iraq and Afghanistan.
Now, what did you actually find as far as the effect of depleted uranium there?
Well, the first big difference compared to the first Gulf War, during the first Gulf War, the rounds which again are high perforation rounds, and so that's why they're being used mostly against tanks. During the first Gulf War, just like during, you know, also the Kosovo War, they were used primarily against tanks in tank battles, you know. And during the first Gulf War, these battles usually took place either in Kuwait or in southern Iraq, in the desert, you know, for the most part. So now you have areas of deserts which the local people call cursed, because they know that local villagers, you know, all died or become, you know, sick and died.
Now, you're saying that the people in these cursed areas where we're heavily contaminated, out in the desert, they're dying from this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a situation where some parts, some desert parts, are really considered cursed, you know, by the local people. First, they don't really know exactly what it is. I mean, now they know, because, you know, the word has been spread. But at the time, you know, they observed some. And just, you know, to give you a quick recap on this, the main thing is, you know, in poor countries, people do a lot of, you know, they recycle anything they can. And when you have, you know, say, expensive equipment, you know, such as tank or, you know, military vehicles laying in the desert, you know, people are going to go there and they're going to start, you know, basically scraping anything they can from the vehicle. They're going to get any kind of, you know, mechanical pieces. They're going to try to sell the metal, you know, for all kinds of recycling.
Now, of course, what happens to the people when they do, of course, come in contact with these vehicles that are heavily contaminated with uranium oxide dust? Do they inhale this? How does it affect their bodies?
Well, absolutely. The thing is, with depleted uranium, it's actually like a double poison. It works as it's a poison like heavy metal, like mercury, for instance, or lead, and also it has this radiation, you know, factor. To really be harmed by depleted uranium, you have somehow to get particles inside the body. The type of rays that come from depleted uranium, they don't travel very far. They cannot cross, you know, many layers of material. But these rays, at our, you know, human scale, are pretty much forever, because their life is about 4.5 billion years. So for us, it's like beyond, you know, eternity for us. So anyway, you have to get that dust inside your body. And usually what happens is you tend to breathe in, you know, when the dust is floating around, flying around, you can breathe it in. Yeah. Or say if you touch something which is contaminated, and then, you know, you eat it, you eat, you know, with your hands dirty, you know, you can get that in your body. Or you have a cut and some dust gets into your body. Once the particles get, you know, inside your body, then you're going to have, you know, the double factor. You're going to have the local, you know, you're going to have poisoning, just like, you know, again, you'd have with mercury or lead. And on top of it, you're going to have particles sitting in different parts of your bodies, you know, with a constant, you know, nuclear rays, you know, creating a local, you know, necrosis in your tissues. So these are the two main poisoning factors.
Now, I understand you've talked to Major Rocky, Doug Rocky, who's actually worked with this for a number of years. He was assigned to in charge of cleaning up the tanks over in Iraq after the first Gulf War.
Absolutely, absolutely. Dr. Rocky is a physicist, and he was working. He was a soldier, and he, as a scientist, he was commissioned to set up a team that would, on the one hand, evaluate the post-war risks and pollution associated to the use of depleted uranium, and also, you know, the main another concern for the military was to find ways to safely clean up, you know, our own tanks that had been hit by friendly fire during the Gulf War. And so what happened is he was sort of a pioneer in looking into these risks. Himself, very unfortunately, and his team, you know, got contaminated. You know, they realized, you know, several years later. And he developed actually he made for the Pentagon some training videos that were supposed to be used in particular by personnel doing the cleanup. So they knew, you know, how to approach, you know, the vehicles. They knew what kind of precautions to take, what kind of, you know, a chemical suit to wear.
Yeah, but there really is no effective means of protecting yourself, is there, or the civilians or anybody else from this?
I'm sorry?
Is there any way to really effectively protect yourself from this?
Well, you know, again, the thing is, first of all, you have to be able to detect, you know, the radiation, because if what you do not see can kill you. And it's true of many different things, like it's true of so many, you know, pollution factors anyway. So the first thing is to be able to detect it, and then, you know, in this particular situation, you know, like getting in contact with vehicles which have been bombed or no buildings, and I will get to it, you know, now in the next
segment. We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Gerard Ungerman.
laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health despite their fatty diet because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules preserved in an airtight capsule just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol. 866-405-4000.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is the time I just have to mention that Radio Liberty does carry the Miracle 2 soap products, and we can't make any medical claims for them, but we can tell you that a lot of the people who use them tell us the most amazing things. And, oh, they tell us it helps their rashes, and it helps their children's acne, and some people say it helps their upper lower gastrointestinal tract and their heartburn. Other people say the neutralizer, which is what they use, seems to help their lower gastrointestinal tract. And all I can tell you is you ought to try that. Now, I would not be without my moisturizing soap. I've used it, and I can tell you it really does moisturize the skin, take away scaly parts of your elbows and things like that. And, of course, the gel, well, I wouldn't be without that either. Why don't you certainly give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And ask for the special introductory offer of Miracle 2 soap products. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Gerard Ungerman. We're talking about depleted uranium. Now, people don't understand. We're sending our boys over into an area that is widely polluted with this in the cities, you know, where they're hitting the houses and, of course, the apartment complexes, and of course, they're just blowing them up with these nuclear-tipped weapons, and this is uranium, and it becomes a uranium oxide, and so, you know, as Mr. Ungerman was saying, in Iraq, they refer to these areas as the cursed areas, those areas that are heavily contaminated, or the people will go out and they'll try to salvage metal off the trucks. Well, I know that Major Rocky, we've talked to him on a number of occasions, and And a number of the men, he had a 100-man team that was underneath him. A number of those people are seriously ill, aren't they, Miss Girard? Have you talked to any of the other people who were on that team, or talked to Dr. Rocky about the people on the team who worked with him in heavily contaminated areas?
Well, I interviewed Major Rocky in the making of the documentary Hidden Walls of Desert Storm, and this was 3 years ago. And we did mention, actually, he did mention some things about his team, saying in particular that, you know, I think most of them unfortunately were sick, and some members were actually already dead. And now what we did is we indeed made a special tape, actually, which is not really a documentary, it's more like extra material, where we put in the entirety of his interview, which is a long interview, and also we included some of the videos which he had made for the Pentagon, that basically state what the Pentagon knows really about the EU in the context of the, of again, cleaning up the vehicles. And actually this tape also is available at hiddenwalls.com.
The tape, the government tape, is available at hiddenwars.com. Why don't we get your website out and your telephone number if people would like to get your material?
Absolutely, absolutely. So our number is 818-487-2879. And our website, again, is hiddenwars.com, all in one word, small caps.
Give that telephone number once again, please.
Sure, it's 818-487-2879, and Hidden Walls, HIDDENWARS.com.
Well, then there certainly a lot of the Iraqis, at least the Iraqis, believe that they've died because of these, in these so-called cursed areas. But this is going to be an entirely different situation because, of course, we've been using these nuclear tipped weapons, these uranium tipped weapons in the cities.
Absolutely.
Do we have any idea what's happening over there as far as the health of the people, or will it take years before they begin to develop their health effects?
Well, absolutely. It seems, I mean, again, this is very, you know, fuzzy knowledge because there was never, you know, really accurate, you know, research done on this. It seems, according to what we have observed during the first Gulf War, you know, with veterans and local populations, it seems to take at least probably like a year and a half to start developing the symptoms associated with the poisoning coming from the EU. And as you said, you know, very rightfully, the difference between the first Gulf War and the new Gulf War is that, you know, these penetrators made of depleted uranium were not used so much now in the fields, in the desert, because pretty much, you know, there was no battles, you know, in this war, you know, in the field. These rounds were actually used in cities. They were used actually even in Baghdad. We have cases where A-10 attacker planes, which again are meant to take on armored vehicles on the ground, they were used in Baghdad to blast at buildings, government buildings, and ourselves when we you know, went in Baghdad and conducted our research and our interviews and everything, we took a Geiger counter with us, and sure enough, you know, we found some of these 30 millimeter rounds laying around, you know, in some compounds, some buildings. And the thing is, because they're so hard, you know, they do not disintegrate. They are abrased, you know, when they hit something, but they do not disintegrate, you know, at all. You know, they're solid rounds, and we made some measurements, and say if you would get in an area in a room, say like a, you know, 2 to 4 pulse a minute, measuring local radiations, you're going to measure these rounds, and they're going to reach, you know, 10,000 pulse in about 40 seconds. They're extremely hot, and in one instance, we found them, you know, inside a compound which is now occupied by U.S. forces. It's a former, you know, palace of Saddam Hussein, which has been recycled, you know, and housing, I think, a division, you know, in Baghdad. So you have, you know, USGIs basically, you know, walking around and living in areas where such rounds, you know, are laying around, and they don't even know because they're not trained for that. They don't know. They have no idea.
And of course, they're being lied to by their superiors, who maybe not even know, but some of them know. The last thing, though, they want is for the average person who's over there fighting and dying to realize what he's up against, and of course, for the American people to learn.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that we actually carry the Berkey products here, and of course there's a big Berkey, and in uncertain times, and believe me, ladies and gentlemen, we are in uncertain times, we're hearing a lot about the possibility of a terrorist attack. What would happen if they cut off the water supply? You said that couldn't happen. Well, I hope and pray it never does happen, but, you know, if you have a water filter, why, you can take pond water or pool water or river water or lake water, and you can filter it, and you have a wonderful, good, clean water supply. You can always boil your water, but here's something where you can filter it, and it does a great job. It's what the missionaries have used. The Big Berkey is made of stainless steel. It'll filter 24 gallons a day, and, of course, you'd water goes through ceramic filters packed with activated carbon. And, of course, these are available in every state in the union except for California and Iowa. They're $279. However, there is a less expensive version. It's available in California, and it's called a Berkey Light. And it's made of Lexan rather than stainless steel, so you can see the water level. That's why we like it. And, of course, the filters are much more efficient. They have to be replaced in 2 or 3 years, though, depending upon how many people are using it, fusing the filters. And then we would simply mention, if you do have fluoride in your water, you're going to get the post filters, it's a lot better to have the Berkey Light, because of course you only have to have two post filters rather than the four you need for the Big Berkey. So it's a trade-off. They're both good, but of course you can't get the Big Berkey in California thanks to the wisdom of the bureaucrats here. If you'd like to learn more about them, go to our website at radioliberty.com. The Berkey Light's $199. The Big Berkey's $270. There's a shipping charge with both of them, but if you buy them through us, you get a four-tape set or a video we produce. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 for the Berkeys. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Gerard Ungerman. And, of course, we've seen this with fluoride. Fluoride's a deadly poison. The manufacturers of aluminum, the manufacturers of fertilizers didn't know what to do with it. It was very expensive to put it into a hazardous a dump. And so what they decided was to put it in our drinking water and convince everybody it was going to help the children's teeth. And it's a lie. Basically, the reason the government loves it is because it cuts down on fertility. And we've got too many people in the world, and if you believe that, we've got the scientific studies paid for with your tax dollars, and the same thing with the depleted uranium. What were they going to do with it? Why, we're going to make weapons out of it. Now, Major Rocky, I've talked to him on a number of occasions, he claims he's actually been threatened and ordered by his superiors not to tell the truth about depleted uranium because they don't want to give up this product. They're worried about one thing. How effective our military is in killing things and destroying things, because that is what the military does. And, of course, the objective of a military is to win wars. But you don't worry about what happens afterwards, and we have a moral obligation to the people of Iraq and to our own boys. A third of the boys who came home after the first Gulf War are ill today, and many of them have died. Now, have you looked at all into the first Gulf War and the effect of depleted uranium on those young men of 13, 14 years later, Gerard?
Well, absolutely. I mean, again, it's difficult to have accurate statistics about who might really have developed the poisoning. We have, you know, figures coming from the VA. From the tip of my memory, I'd say like a third of the 600,000 plus military personnel who served during the first Gulf War in the Gulf filed for disability. and now well over 10,000 of them you know, have died. But now these statistics do not specify how, you know, they got sick or how they died. Everything is combined, and even, you know, even if you try to narrow down to people who may have developed cancer, and again, I do not have these statistics, you'd have to consider that there's probably a mix of different causes. The exposure to oil well fires for months, you know, brings this soot, which is known to be very, you know, toxic, or also some soldiers have developed very strong reactions to the anthrax vaccines. This is another thing. So definitely there are several causes, you know, for poisoning. But anybody who have been in contact with DU dust, and that would include probably gunners on guns, you know, firing these rounds. That may include any personnel who went to basically go visit, you know, battlefields and check out, you know, destroyed Iraqi vehicles, is kind of likely to have, you know, been put in contact with DU dust, and even have, you know, inhaled or put some of the dust in their bodies. Are you here?
There about we have a clipping. I just pulled it for somebody who called in and wanted to see it. There are 22,000 young men and women who've come back, primarily men who've come back from our war in Afghanistan and our war in Iraq, that are ill and trying to get care at the veterans' hospitals. Now, I don't know how many of those include the almost 5,000 now that have been seriously wounded, casualties of war, and there were almost 1,000 have died, but there are 22,000 that are ill. And how are they ill? Well, they've got aches, and they've got pains, and they've got rashes, and... Well, what does that sound like? It sounds like the Gulf War illness that so many of the people have. But this is not the first Gulf War. This is the second Gulf War. Have you heard anything at all about this sort of thing, that some of our boys are coming home and very ill?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, there are many stories going around. Ourselves, you know, we're trying to get a more precise idea for this current documentary that we're doing. And it's kind of difficult because on the one hand, you know, it's difficult to get information from the military. Yeah, it's a bit early to get information from the VA. And we've tried in particular to, we spoke with some soldiers on the ground, but it's difficult to get soldiers fresh from Iraq and Afghanistan to come and talk freely, because, you know, even after they are, you know, they come back, they are still under gag order. And the main way to that military personnel are being threatened at this point is, you know, it's a case where they're being told, if you talk to the press, well, you're going to lose your pension benefits, you know. So, you know, people try to have a career, and eventually, you know, to retire with some benefits. You know, they don't want to lose these benefits.
You mean they're actually threatening these boys who are coming home if they tell the truth about what happened to them and about their illness?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. No, and we heard several stories about this. You know, that literally a gag order. You know, not to talk about what they saw and experienced in Iraq and Afghanistan, which is something which is new. I mean, it did not happen during the first Gulf War. Of course, it didn't happen in Vietnam. That was a different situation, but it is definitely not happening today. And it's a case where we will probably hear many, many more, you know, people speak, you know, after they got the 20 years of service, because then they feel that they're safe, you know, their retirement benefits are insured, so they'll be able to talk more freely. But that this is what we have to deal with at this point.
Well, when did you come back from Iraq?
We came back, about 6 months ago. Right before the explosion of violence in Iraq.
You mean the new explosion. Did you have any difficulty getting over there? Was there any problems at all?
No, I mean, at the time when we went in Iraq, it was not so bad. I mean, there was no border, there was no institutions, you know, so it was really the easiest country to get in the world, probably. It was not so bad. I think it was still at the time when many Iraqis had expectations, had hopes, you know, of what would ensue. They were hoping, you know, I think it's fair to say that many were probably happy to be rid of Saddam, and they were expecting their situation to improve rapidly after, you know, 12 years of really harsh embargo. And so they are still friendly for the most part. And now, you know, now we know that nothing has been fixed, nothing has been improved. the life is even worse now, to many degrees than it was during the embargo. So, that, you know, that's why there's such an explosion of violence and hatred. So it's kind of difficult now for a Westerner to be just traveling around and interviewing people at random and, you know, without any kind of protection. So that's much more dangerous now.
Well, now, when you were there 6 months ago, had they got the electricity up? Had they got the water running so that people would have water and electricity like they had before that we came to liberate them?
Well, no, actually. This is one of the main reasons why, you know, anger was starting to brew. Because, you know, well, you know, for 12 years nothing had been fixed properly during the embargo, so the entire, you know, power grid and all the water installations were really in a very poor shape, and the war was like the last shaking that did, you know, make the entire thing collapse for the most part, and you had especially the poor neighborhoods, you know, no running water and practically no power. And nothing was being done, you know, to fix anything, and now it's getting even worse, you know, because on top of it, you know, if locally there may have been a few little, you know, token works done by the military to try to demonstrate, you know, willingness to arrange things, you know, you've had on top of this, you know, some sabotage from people who do not want the foreign prisons to be there and do anything, you know, for the country. So between the lack of real commitment and on top of it, you know, decay and sabotage, the whole country has literally, you know, collapsed into real chaos, real hardship. And I think it's even worse. It is worse than during the embargo.
No, and of course, when you talk to the people in the cities, were they aware of the threat and the danger of depleted uranium that surrounded them?
I do not think so. You know, definitely there was awareness, especially I would say within the medical corps. We spoke with many doctors who, you know, especially those working in leukemia yards, cancer yards, wards. They've been, you know, aware of these things now for many years. It was definitely, you know, a present subject, you know, in Iraq. The main population, I think, heard it. Because the Iraqi regime, the Saddamian regime, was very keen on talking about these issues to blame, you know, the U.S. after the first Gulf War, but I do not think that people are aware that it happened again. You know, they may suspect it, but they may not know it has happened again this time inside, you know, big cities.
Well, now, of course, have you talked to people, other medical experts in this country or in other countries? Are other countries concerned about it? Certainly, we contaminated Kosovo. We contaminated Chechnya. At least the Russians did. We contaminated Bosnia. We contaminated, to some extent, Kuwait. So, what, you know, have you talked to people in any of these other countries or the other countries that had troops in there? I know many countries have had troops in, say, in Bosnia. Mm-hmm. Are they concerned about that?
Well, absolutely, absolutely. As far as a specialist, we had spoken in particular to a professor called Professor Gunther in Germany, who was one of the pioneers in looking into the effects of depleted uranium. He was actually, I believe, the first scientist to go to Iraq after the first Gulf War to do some measurements and try to determine, you know, what was the scope of the pollution. And it's kind of his story is famous in the sense that he came back to Germany with some samples of depleted uranium. And he was caught in at customs. I don't know if he did declare that or not, but I know he was actually arrested, you know, in Germany, briefly, because he was accused of bringing, you know, hazardous material in the country. So that was one person that we spoke to, but definitely there has been more awareness in Europe about these issues after the war, you know, in Kosovo and Bosnia, because many peacekeepers, you know, came in contact with, you know, depleted uranium dust and started developing what is, you know, commonly referred to as the Gulf War, you know, syndrome. And so this did bring awareness to this issue in Europe, and there was, you know, some major scandals to the point where there's now a discussion at the European Union about banning, you know, ammunition made of depleted uranium. But unfortunately, the scandal did not really erupt here on such a scale.
Well, I think this is what's so interesting, is that they know about this over in Europe, and I think the European Union is talking about banning uranium-tipped missiles. But, of course, because of the degree of control of the media here, the average person has never heard about this. And yet, it is a real threat, and if we were ever to have a war in this country, why, we would have the same weapons used against us that we've used against other countries. And how could you complain? Because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And I would challenge our listeners here to go up on the web and look at traprockpeace.com. That's traprockpeace.com. And look at the articles there. Go to the Royal Society over in London. Have you done any research into the various articles that have been written by impartial people about the dangers of these depleted uranium weapons?
Well, again, there is a big controversy, which is based on the fact that we really lack, you know, long, serious studies on this, in particular as far as, you know, the type of poisoning that it triggers, because it may vary with individuals. I must say, I did look at, you know, at different sources, but I didn't work on this subject again more recently. It was more research that we did for the documentary three years ago, which of course is still, you know, still accurate today. So I probably would not be the best person again to tell you about, you know, the most recent research. Not being a scientist, being more a journalist, I'd rather, you know, people to do research on the internet in particular, try to really cross-reference as many, you know, references as possible. They certainly would be able to find more up-to-date data. That's what I would be able to tell you on this point.
Well, I really got up on the web and looked into it before I was willing to take a position on it, because, I mean, how could, of course, nobody in America know whether this was a problem, and yet people in Europe would know? Well, and how would it be that most doctors have no idea, and most people think when you're talking about depleted uranium that there isn't any uranium there, whereas it's really solid uranium, it's just that they've taken out a little of the most overly radioactive part. But how much of the uranium-234 and 235 remain there? Do you have any idea in the uranium after they've taken out the more fissionable uranium? Some of it's still there, isn't it?
Well, in particular, as I mentioned earlier, well, first of all, yes. I mean, it's still uranium. The isotope, you know, is still there. In particular, even though, you know, even the ore itself, which has been depleted, it's still, you know, hazardous. You also have, as I said, uranium coming from, you know, power plants, the spent radioactive fuel, you know, used in power plants. You have a situation where the process of using it for fuel, enriching it and using it for fuel, creates plutonium, which is actually the most toxic metal on Earth. And so the part of the stock of DU that comes from power plants contain plutonium also, which also makes it, you know, even more dangerous.
All right, fine. Well, do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners? First of all, I'd like you to get out your telephone number and your website just one more time.
Absolutely. Our website for Hidden Walls of Desert Storm is Hidden Walls, HiddenWars.com, and our telephone number is 818-487-2879.
All right, fine. And of course, they can get your other video on the depleted uranium there as well.
Absolutely.
All right, fine. And you sent me two videos. I'm going to make it a point to be listening or watching them here tonight or tomorrow night. But I want to thank you so very much. Our guest has been Gerard Ungerman, and of course he's already done a video on this. When will your new video on depleted uranium be available?
Actually, the video that we had made, you know, a couple of years ago, is available at this point. And through this website, hiddenworld.com. And as far as the new documentary that we are producing now, which also contain a part about, you know, what we observed in Baghdad in particular, with the 30 millimeter DU rounds laying around, this documentary hopefully should be available between July and August.
All right, fine. Well, we'll be talking to you then again, but thank you so very much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to be sure for our listening audience out across America to know if you have shortwave, you know people aren't using shortwave. Our afternoon program is 9.430 shortwave. Our evening program from 8 to 10 is 7.535, and that is, of course, from 8 to 10 Pacific or 11 to 1 Eastern Time. And then, of course, our afternoon program here goes 3 to 5, and then on the East Coast from 6 to 8, and that's 9.430. So please help us get out that information. We were doing fine until they suddenly changed all of our frequencies, and so a lot of people can't find them. We'll be putting that out in our next newsletter and sending out information across America. But your job is to let people know what's going on, and we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 on the North Arm off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. And this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book anywhere that will give you a more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have a 4-tape set on the Gulf War. It's really a very touching tape. There's a young woman there. She was with the Graves detail. There were about 15 people in her unit after the time of the first Gulf War. At the time I talked to her, she was confined to a wheelchair. Everybody else in her unit was dead. And they weren't casualties of war. They were casualties of whether it was whatever diseases or whatever toxins had killed the people that they were throwing into big open graves, and I have no idea what it was, whether it's a sarin gas that was exploded at Kampuchea or whether it is depleted uranium. But as you talk to some of these people, they're touching stories, and you need to understand what we did to the boys. We sent over there a third of them, they'll admit, are sick. We only lost a little over 100 people in the battle. And yet over 225 to 250,000 are ill today, and over 10,000 have died, and some people say the figures are probably twice what we're quoting you. So you need to understand the 4-tape set on Gulf War is important. And then, of course, if you care about your family, you've got to know about what they're doing with fluoride. We have a 4-tape set on fluoride. We have a 4-tape set on mercury. Do you know the effect of mercury fillings? Do you know the toxic effect? Do you know about the mercury that they have in the vaccines? Oh, we've taken it out, they'll tell you, but we want your child to have, a flu shot, knowing full well that there's toxic doses in there, about at least 40 to 60 times what the child should have. And if you were foolish enough to give your child a flu vax shot last year, why, of course, you gave them a toxic dose of mercury. All the tape sets, fluoride, mercury, Gulf War syndrome, and so many others are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. You need to get the information. You need to help us disseminate the truth. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course I need to remind all of our listeners out there that please to remember our shortwave frequencies. They've been changed for our afternoon program, 3 to 5 Pacific, 6 to 8 on the East Coast is 9.430. Here in the on the evening program from 8 to 10, or on the East Coast from 11 to 1 in the morning, it's 7.535. And we'll be posting these on our website. That's 9.430 or 7.535. Please help us get the information out. We had a great listening audience until they changed our frequencies and without any previous notice. Well, then, of course, this is the time I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, which is how we're able to finance what we do. We have so many great new products. One of them, of course, is called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. It's a four-hour video, and you'll actually hear many of the people, musicians, very popular musicians, talking about Mr. Crowley. Do you know who Mr. Crowley was? He was a Satanist, and we're talking about Marilyn Manson. We're talking about Ozzy Osbourne. We're talking about other of the most prominent people talking about Mr. Crowley, who was a Satanist. And you'll see the pictures of Mr. Crowley on some of the various things that are put out by the Beatles, pictures of Crowley. Why? Because these people were all deeply involved into Satanism. You need to get the four-tape set. They Sold Their Souls from Rock and Roll. To hear Timothy Leary talking about how Crowley was the architect of the drug revolution that took over America in the 1960s and 70s and still haunts us today with its legacy. So that's one excellent new video we have. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. Certainly the video Megiddo, which is very professionally done, gives you the background of the great wars of the last century and the coming Third World War. And then, of course, Diaprax and the Church, going into the background of the church growth movement. And there, a lot of great people think this is really wonderful, but we're just watering down the scriptures because we don't want to offend anybody. We don't want to tell people that there is a hell and that God is going to judge everyone in the world. We don't want to make anybody feel ill at ease, or we certainly don't want to talk about the fact we're all sinners. So there is a message. They've changed the gospel of the church. They've changed the music. You need to get our four-tape set, Musical Madness. You need to get their book, The Crisis in Christian Music by Dr. Jack Wheaton. You need to help us get the truth out. You're not going to get through other channels. If you haven't seen my video, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or so many of the other books that we have here at Radio Liberty. And if you'd like to get one of free a newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send you a free newsletter. We hope that many of you will want to get the information on sustainable development. We have a wonderful syllabus on that, and you'll get the Earth Charter and the World Bank Water Policy and the Master Plan for Population Reduction, because they really intend to kill off most of the world's population, which is why we're not doing anything logical to stop the spread of AIDS in America, where over 500,000 people are dead and probably close to another million people infected. It's all unnecessary, but it's a wonderful way of killing off the blacks, because they're predominantly blacks, and the homosexuals, because they're predominantly homosexuals. So you need to get the information. It's available in our Sustainable Development syllabus. Ladies and gentlemen, there really is evil in the world. There really are people who worship the devil. And many of these are in key positions in our government. And that great humanitarian, Mikhail Gorbachev, the former head of the Soviet KGB, has written a new Ten Commandments for the world. It's called the Earth Charter. You'll find it in our Sustainable Development syllabus. You can get that along with the Sustainable Development four-tape set, or certainly the Sustainable Development video, by calling 1-800-544-8927. Get the information. Help us to get the truth out while we still can. Until tomorrow at the same time, this is Dr. Stan saying goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.